Canadian director Ivan Reitman and ex-Saturday Night Live cast and writers like Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, and Harold Ramis. What they got in the movie Ghostbusters was a PG scary movie, not terribly scary movie itself, but it had a lot of laughs and it became a hit that spawned an unlikely franchise. However, Columbia's nervousness for the release of the movie was such that they hired singer Ray Parker Jr. to help sell it by writing a jingle to it, basically, a song that advertised the movie by repeating the product name, like you would for Coke or Levi's or Tide detergent. And for better or worse, it worked.
But if there's really nothing, are you looking for ways to be a part of the community through low-stakes opportunities like volunteering? What about making friends that are really cool or have some common interests? Well, I'm here to tell you that at CITR, you can come volunteer at Volunteer Wednesdays, happening every other Wednesday from 12 to 3 with a really fun activity each time, like making signs or button making. Not only is it a great break from outside stress, but a great opportunity to be a part of the community. For more information, you can visit CITR's Instagram page at CITR and Discorder.
You're listening to Movie Maverick Mike and Logan the Extra on CITR 101.9 UBC Vancouver. So Logan, Ghostbusters is a favorite movie of mine. What did you think of it?
I really liked it. I mean, it's a bit of a nostalgic movie now, if you ask me. And some of the effects show its time, but it's actually a pretty good movie. It's kind of scary, I guess. Not really. It's more about fun and action, I don't know, characters, I guess. What would you say is the main focus of the movie?
Yeah, it's hard to talk about this movie without talking about the current franchise that it birthed, which was quite unlikely. I mean, this was kind of a gentle, pleasant, mildly scary movie in 1984, a surprise hit, like I said, for Columbia, not necessarily a franchise builder like The Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or something like that.
Yeah, it's not like you walked out of the first Ghostbusters and like, oh, I want to know more. What was, you know,
what
this
happened
character
to these
didn't
characters?
Have the arc. There were so many loose ends that they left, you know.
And I think that as it came out, there was the idea that this was popular enough. And, you know, when this broadcast comes out, the fifth movie, how many movies are there? There was two with the original cast.
No, there's three with the original cast. There was, I thought.
No, just the two. Ghostbusters 2 was the end of it with
that
Bill Murray, Harold
that
Ramis.
Was the pink
Dan
slime
Aykroyd.
In the sewers?
Yeah. And Ernie Hudson. And then the third one was the all-female cast.
Right, the all-female Ghostbusters. And the fourth one was the young Ghostbusters.
With Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yeah.
And then shortly we'll get Ghostbusters
Something About Cold.
Frozen Empire.
Frozen Empire, that's what it is. Yeah. But just to talk about this one for a bit, yeah, it was, you said a bit in the intro, they weren't really expecting this to be a hit, were they?
No, and I think the Saturday Night Live cast through, you know, and they had done other hit movies like, what was the Harold Ramis, Stripes. So they had, and Blues Brothers. So they had a pedigree, Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray had a pedigree. What's that golfing movie? Caddyshack.
Caddyshack, of course.
Yeah, that okay, these guys can make something funny, but they were saying, but this is a scary movie and it's not set in a haunted house. It's not set in a scary castle. It's set in, you know, modern day New York. That was quite a change of pace. And I think that's what made Columbia Pictures a little bit nervous about it. Because, I think for Ghostbusters, it was a lot of lightning in the bottle because you had Dan Aykroyd, who's actually interested in the occult. So, and again, we assume that listeners have seen Ghostbusters, heard of it.
Yeah,
how could you
I'm
not have
sure
heard of Ghostbusters
of have,
by
yeah.
now? Yeah. And so that he was all those lines about Gozer and Sumerians and all that, you know, ancient 13th century. You think they were there for comedy effect? No, Aykroyd was really into that. So you had him. You had Harold Ramis, who was a comedy writer. You had Bill Murray, who was a bit of a clown. And a lot of times they were filmed the scene and said, okay, Bill Murray, do something funny.
Yeah, which you can kind of tell he does a good job of the movie. I mean,
for sure, yeah. And you have to kind of let him run, but it has to be, okay, we still have a plot and character development to work with here.
It's his movie, but you still got to, you know, point him in the right direction.
Yeah. And then I remember they said during the production that Dan Aykroyd said something. He said, you know what's great about this movie is that we got three or four writers, no waiting, because he was a writer, Harold Ramis was a writer, and Rick Moranis is a comedy writer, so he wrote most of his scenes and added stuff onto there. Ernie Hudson's part was originally written for Eddie Murphy, who they figured they could get to appeal, and he didn't want to be the third or fourth guy in the movie, Eddie Murphy, actor dropped out, and then Ernie Hudson kind of came in halfway through the movie.
Wow. So So this had a good chance of not working, is what you're saying.
Well, it's funny. You have to put that all together, and you have to have it in a way that, like you say, is still funny. I submit, and I'm getting a bit ahead of myself here, that Ghostbusters, you can't have people killed in Ghostbusters, which seems a little odd for looking at the trailers for Frozen Empires. But you can't have it. You can have it about the fate of the world, but you can't have Friday the 13th or Hellraiser kind of action to it.
No, that's a really good point, because I did watch the trailer for Frozen Empire, and people were freezing over, and some of them I thought seemed like they were dying. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. I couldn't really articulate why I didn't like that, but no, you're right. Ghostbusters, it's a movie about ghosts, you know, attacking people. You can't have people die.
No, and I think that I don't know how they came upon the, you know, he slimed me moment. Yeah. But I mean, that's you can't have somebody get killed and everybody goes, we have to fix it, or somebody get, you know, cut or something like that, right?
Yeah, this kind of goes back into the brightly lit New York setting that we were talking about, is that these ghosts, I mean, the end of the world was coming in the end, but no one really got harmed, did they? The ghosts were kind of like poltergeist-esque, that they'd rattle some plates and, you know, hijack a chandelier or make things inconvenient and maybe accidentally dangerous, but never that aggressive.
So I think that was, I think give Reitman and the writers credit that they hit that sweet spot, because it can't be like Walt Disney at the time, scary, like what's that, Escape from Ghost Mountain or whatever.
Yeah, or like the one where they have buttons for eyes. I had the name, Coraline.
Coraline, yeah. That was I found a little bit scary, but I'm thinking more like 1970s scary.
Oh, okay.
And then you can't have it, like I said, Hellraiser, will tear your soul apart, kind of scary. So they hit that. And I think they were lucky to have the combination. Like one of my favorite parts, I think I've said to you before, was when they go to the now famous firehouse where they set up their office or whatever. And then Bill Murray, the realtor, thinking around, and he said to Harold Ramis, what do you think of this place? I think this is, the building should be scrapped. He said, the neighborhood is a demilitarized zone. The electricity is substandard. And he rattles off all these technical specifications. And I think for better or for if they had planned it or not, that's a good contrast to Bill Murray, his buffoonery and his insults and his...
And everything kind of going right for him, too.
Yeah. So I think you had two different types of comedy all coming together, and that helped make Ghostbusters a surprise hit.
Yeah, no, and it helps with the four of them, because you've kind of got, like you said, the straight man, who is, this is all terrible, this is never going to work. We're walking around with an unlicensed particle accelerator on our back, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you got a clown. A couple of the other guys had some lines, too, and they usually had kind of the funny reactive lines, I guess. Like, who's the one who said he slimed me?
That was Bill Murray. So
that was Bill Murray.
That's a great segue to what I was going to say. I was old enough to see this in the theaters with a date. My date at the time would laugh at anything, and that helped the whole theater. I think she kind of inadvertently, because we all weren't sure if we're supposed to laugh at this completely. But I remember that moment in the theater when they meet Slimer the ghost in the hotel. And there's watching the theater, and we're dialed into this. Okay, this is really good. We've had some laughs. We got Bill Murray, and they have that pause. What happened to you? And he pauses. He slimed me. And so it seems odd. The next five or six lines we never heard. In fact, I never heard until I saw it on video, because everybody was laughing their heads off. And I mean, I realized watching it now, the audience was totally won over by that moment. So.
Yeah, it's not to mention it. That's a bit of a slapstick moment almost. Though it's not. This isn't really witty or anything, but.
And I think we wanted to laugh, and nobody knew what slimed me was. I mean, this was before the children's Nickelodeon where they slime people. I mean, this was the birth of the idea that you could get green goo run all over you or whatever.
I never thought of it that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or Grocery Checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today.
You're listening to that song from that movie on 101.9 FM CITR Radio. So, Mike, you wanted to talk about the song.
So this song was, It took me a while to realize it's like a jingle. Apparently, when they reached out to Ray Parker Jr., who I'd never heard of at the time, but he was a minor. I think at the time he was a minor hit person. Have you ever heard of his name before on the Ghostbusters?
Not to mention it, no. The only thing I can think of with him is this song.
So, and they reached out to him and they said, the only thing you have to, we want you to do a song for this comedic movie, but you have to have the title in the song. So apparently during the production of it, somebody said, why don't we just shout Ghostbusters? Because they had seen some clips in the song where they said, who are you going to call? Ghostbusters. I mean, there were some, in the context of the movie, that they have those fake ads and they say, oh no, we're going to have to move. No, we can call Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it does kind of play into the movie that they're trying to start a business and, you know, with the receptionist on the phone kind of thing.
So the song I found is very cynical and very self-aware because it says, who are you going to call Ghostbusters, which comes from the movie. It has that logo, the logo of the ghost with
the red circle and line through it.
Yeah. And apparently they weren't sure if that was going to be in the marketing or they pulled it out of the movie. And once they saw it on the side of the ambulance, they said, no, I can't remember if they put it on the ambulance first or if they said, we got to put this on the side of the ambulance. And then they said, okay, we're going to use that for the marketing and for the song. And it was everywhere.
And now it's a symbol pretty well established.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be in every movie, all the sequels now too.
Yeah.
But the song itself, do you want to listen to the song first or do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, sure. Let's give it a listen.
Better call Ghostbusters. Oh, who you gonna call?
I don't know. Have you ever seen the video for this song, Logan?
I don't think so, actually.
To me, it didn't make the song any better.
So one thing first. Did you like the music video then? Did you think it was good?
Can I say meh?
You can.
But the song itself?
The song itself I liked.
It's a terrible song.
What do you mean?
You don't think it's repetitive? It's repetitive on purpose.
What song isn't repetitive?
Lots of songs are not repetitive. Your favorite song isn't repetitive.
Come on, but like... I mean, it's catchy. It's hard to, like you said, it is a bit like a jingle. And like, we got to make sure that people walk away from this remembering one word, and that's Ghostbusters. Yeah, but they did it, and it's, you know, you can sing along who you want to call.
So you can't argue with a song that was a hit. I'm sure this was a top 10 in the summer of 84. And for me, I mean, it's repetitiveness and got played over and over again. And, you know, you can't say, oh, this song doesn't have a life outside of the movie, because the song was written for the movie. And it's not like, but other songs we've talked about have had a life, like the Batman. And I guess what I'm saying is that songs written for a movie, this one seems the most cynical and most, it's more important to be catchy than interesting song in my mind.
Well, it can be both. I mean, I guess it's not that challenging of a song, and it's not artistic. Like if you think of, you were going to mention Batman, we did an episode which included Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me.
By You Too, yeah.
And Kiss from a Rose.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, those two are very artistic songs. They're interesting. They extend past the movie, but you don't have to. I mean, I think it became a hit not just because of the movie. I mean, it helped that it was in a really popular movie, but people still, you know, would sing along to it and stuff. But
we often on this show ask the question, can you think of this song without thinking of the movie the other way around? This one, obviously, you can't because married together.
Yeah, they have the same name.
Yeah, and they were meant, one was meant to be marketing the movie, and the Ghostbusters theme plays during the movie, if I remember right, like just before they get to the final battle.
I don't think it plays in full.
No.
At any time. But yeah, it does play for a while.
Yeah, and so the song is part of the movie, and I think there's a bit of, from the actor's perspective, a kind of winking of the audience that was saying, we know that the song you're listening to in this movie is going to be played on the radio, which would, you know, kind of, that's not really breaking the fourth wall.
Well, but it kind of is meta, if I'm allowed to use that word, because it's in the context of the movie, they're like, this is a song that would play as a jingle and maybe play on the radio. But in real life, it plays on the radio. And, you know, in the movie, it's about advertising the Ghostbusters. In real life, it's about advertising the Ghostbusters. So it's kind of weird in that way. I was kind of endeared to this song. Of course, because of the movie, but partially because I used to play it on Rock Band on the Wii.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was going to say that's a bit of a testament to it surviving, probably. It surviving just that movie is that whoever was selecting it, I don't remember which version of Rock Band it was, but whoever was selecting the things for it said, yeah, this one's going to be important enough that we're going to put it in here, even though it's just from a movie, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's a popular, I guess Rock Band doesn't always pick popular songs that they have in their list.
They're pretty popular.
No, I mean, this one obviously was, but yeah.
Yeah, so does this song play again in any of the sequels?
You know, I'm sure it plays in the second one. So the second movie, it's, people have said comedy sequels are hard. So mm-hmm. I think this movie, I'm 90% sure that this song played in the sequel. And the reason why comedy movies are hard is because the first one can be kind of discovered. And especially for Ghostbusters, this mid-tempo, mostly funny, mildly scary movie set, like we said, in an unusual setting. I think it was a novelty. And mm-hmm. There were funny, scary movies before then. I mean, romance was kind of
secondary, but it was there.
Yeah, it was there. So, okay, for the sequel, we want you to do exactly the same thing. We need to have romance. We need to have the same people laugh in the same way, too, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. And you also have to be unique and novel and unusual at the same time.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is the prime example is the Hangover movies. Have you ever seen the Hangover movies?
No, I have not, actually.
And the third one is cold and dark, and I dare people to laugh at some of the parts of the third Hangover movie. And that's part of, it didn't do as well, but I'm sure the director, I'm showing my ignorance here. The director of the Hangover movies, I think, went on to direct the Joker movie. Todd Hines or something like that. I'm getting my names mixed up, so I apologize for that. But anyways, so they abandoned making this movie, the next one, funny. So for the Ghostbusters, number two, have you seen Ghostbusters 2?
Although it didn't stick in my memory much. It's like you said, comedy sequels are hard, and this is no exception.
Yeah, and I think so that made that after the second one, they couldn't help but make a second one, and they were smart enough to add in other comedic people, like
yeah, that's true. I guess
the fellow who worships Vigo,
he was really over the top. So
yeah,
it helps.
Yeah, and so they're smart to say we can't just be the only ones funny in the sequel. In the first one we could be, but we need more funny people to pad it out. Well, and then they never did make a third Ghostbusters with the original cast.
I was gonna say, I think in the first one they did have a couple people that would be funny around them. Like, one of the most iconic lines is ironically the Ghostbusters, what do you want? That kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's
so
right, yeah.
So other people can have their moments. And Rick Moranis is another one where he's not really part of the main cast, but he still gets his moments. But the second
I think
one, so the second one, they tried to work on that as well, but like you said, it's, I don't know, it wasn't the same.
In a comedy, that the story arc is kind of in some way secondary. I mean, I think they had won the day, whatever. It doesn't really matter what they win as long as they win the day. The mm-hmm. romance is, and whatever villainous people. You don't need to have, in my opinion, a strong or horrendous villain like Walter Peck. And who's, by the way, that actor, I'm assuming, playing the same characters in Frozen Empire. So he's going
really?
From 1 to 5. But so for the sequel, it doesn't have to be, it has to be funny and novel, but it doesn't necessarily have to be romantic. It doesn't have to be conquering of the villain. It doesn't have to be overcoming the odds. The third one, I didn't see the third one with the all-female cast.
Not that I know.
Kristen Wiig? I get her name wrong, yeah. There were some strong performances in it, apparently. Chris Hemsworth was in it, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we're ignorant about the third one, which was not a hit.
No, it was not a hit, and it was, people made a big deal out of it politically.
Yeah.
And so that kind of, you know, I think
you were making a political
movie.
Statement whether you saw or not saw this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Melissa McCartney?
That sounds right.
Yeah, like, as well, yeah. And then, so the fourth one was kind of a surprise, Ghostbusters Afterlife. We saw that one, right?
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah, and so I think they did a lot of smart decisions there. Ivan Reitman's son directed it, which doesn't necessarily mean it's the same kind of movie. But, oh, no, I can't think of his name. Jason Reitman, that's Ivan's son, who had made Up in the Air and other movies up until that point. But what's interesting to me about Afterlife was that the movie almost assumes you've seen the first movie. Not that you've know the characters, but you know what a ghost trap is, you know what Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is, and you know that song.
I wouldn't say almost, I'd say completely. I mean, again, we'll say hopefully you've watched Afterlife. If you haven't, we're sorry. But yeah, there's ghost traps. There's the Ghostmobile, is it called?
I think it's called.
It is called the Ghostmobile.
Maybe, yeah, sure.
Whatever it's called, you know. They have that. You know, the main character is the children of Spengler, I believe.
Egon Spengler's, yeah, yeah. His grandchildren. Well,
yeah,
his daughter and grandchildren. Yeah.
And then they talk about the Ghostbusters a bunch, and it's like, if it's written for people who have seen the first movie, you know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. And I think it ignores the third one canonically. I mean, and again,
it probably ignores the second one canonically, too.
A lighthearted comedy, you don't have to have that. But what's interesting to me, I think in the next movie, the Frozen Empire, there's something where Paul Rudd says, who are you going to call? And someone says, don't say it. so it's like I said, it's referencing the movie
itself, yeah.
Not necessarily the characters in the plot, which it seems a bit odd, what you said about it being meta, right?
Yeah, and even in the Afterlife, it was kind of like that too. I mean, Afterlife is an indulgent title if there ever was one.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of that movie, well, yeah, spoiler. At the end of that movie,
you know, the people need to know what happens at the end of the movie to get to the fifth one, so there mm-hmm. you go, it's timely.
They get, the cast from the original one comes back, and Egon Spengler, Egon Spengler, who was that? That actor was dead when.
Yeah,
when
so Harold Ramis, director of Groundhog Day and, you know, a popular writer director in his own right, he had passed before mm-hmm. This.
And they brought him back as a CGI ghost, which actually looked not bad. And, you know, it's Ghostbusters. You can have ghosts. So, you know, they get some leeway. But yeah, the original cast comes back is the punchline.
Yeah, I think you got it right. It all fits together. It honors Egon Spengler. His character actually doesn't speak as in this
mm-hmm,
movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you already had the idea of having a ghost. So you don't want the ghost for an actor who, it's fairly well known that actor has died, to be sacrilegious or to be disrespectful.
Yeah,
you want to sort of pay tribute to that. And then you have the old cast in there. And then you have the old people, you know, they may not know exactly what, like you said, I don't know exactly what happened in the second movie, but there was ghost traps and there's this cool ambulance and the ghosts get put into, the, you know, I mean, they refer to all that stuff too, right?
Yeah, and they did mix it up, the formula a bit, is that it's still a comedy, but it's not the same way. I mean, they had, this is mostly about kids, the movie. Which is a bit of a change of pace, and they have to kind of discover this. And also, it's a bit more serious, ironically. There was some action, and there was some stakes and some threat in this.
Yeah, there has to be, I was just going to use that word, there has to be some threat to it. And to me, the secret sauce in the fourth one, Afterlife, and hopefully in Frozen Empire, is Paul Rudd, because he's got a character that you have to have somebody who doesn't take this too seriously. Mm-hmm. You have to have someone who's like, OMG, we're all going to get killed. This ghost is going to kill us or take over the world or, you know, turn me into a zombie or whatever. And that person has to be able to go make a scary noise. But you have to have someone like Paul Rudd, that school teacher character who's like, no, we're all going to be fine. And, well, we'll just turn on the ghost trap.
Yeah, and he's a bit of a fanatic, too, which, again, is referencing the other movies that all of us who are fans of Ghostbusters and, like, oh, yeah, we know how traps work. And is that a Ghostbusters thing?
That's a very good point. I wonder if, as Ghostbusters fans, we can see ourselves, male or female, in Paul Rudd's school teacher character to a degree as a fan, knowledgeable in the tools and knowledgeable what's in stake, and, you know, a little bit irreverent, like the Bill Murray character, yes.
Yeah, and he's kind of just like an everyday character, you know. We can't all be the son of Egon, grandchild of Egon, but...
Yeah, and we can't be, you know, this occult master like Dan Aykroyd's character now works in an occult bookstore. So, yeah, it gives us a way into the character. That's the guy we would like to be in a Ghostbusters sequel in some ways,
But that does lead me to the question, are you going to watch Frozen Empire?
Oh, for sure. I think it's going to be a fairly big hit, not like Dune big hit, or not like Deadpool big, but yeah, it's going to, to me, it's going to further the franchise. It's going to be $180 million weekend. You hear me saying it's going to open, and depending on whether it's good or not, it's going to clear $500 million, I think.
Wow. You're a lot more optimistic on this than me, because I thought Afterlife was, you know, a diamond in the rough, that they somehow managed to make a good Ghostbusters sequel, and that might never happen again. So, we'll
yeah, see. I think you got the appeal in the trailers. The original characters are back. Do you think we'll hear the song again to bring it full circle?
Probably, actually. Yeah. This one seems even more leaning into the nostalgia than the other one. So, they're going to pull out all the stops. Let's see. Really, we should put down a bet on the over-under if we see a Twinkie or not.
Hey there. Do you like sweet and sentimental stories and songs?
Do you enjoy a pleasant chat and a giggle with pals? Then you're going to love our show, Love Notes, here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Every week, a new guest selects a great love of their life, a sibling, a romantic partner, a best friend, and we get to make a show about the stories and songs that make up their love.
Join us on this journey for the ears and the heart every other Tuesday at 10 a.m.
You've been listening to that song from that movie on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Movie Maverick Mike, and you can find me on Facebook and Instagram.
I'm Logan the Extra, and you can find a recording of this podcast, this show, and all of our shows on CITR.ca. Thank you for listening.